You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Paul Mazursky has been an actor, director, screenwriter, and producer over his 5 decades in the movie business, and along the way he's earned 5 Academy Award nominations. Now the Film Society of Lincoln Center is bringing his best work back to the big screen. Producer of arts programming Joanna Ney has curated a series of screenings that begins tonight and continues through May 10th. It's called The Magic of Paul Mazursky, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Paul Mazursky and Joanna Ney to my show today. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
And Paul, this will be your first major retrospective. Does it feel like it's been a long time coming?
It feels like it happened 10 years ago. I don't know. You know, I was very excited when Joanna called me, and I never thought about the fact that I never had one, because I just sort of keep working as much as I can. But it's nice.
Why the magic of Paul Mazursky? Because his work is diverse enough so that you had to find some kind of adjective?
Well, I don't know. I think I might have stolen it from his book.
I have a memoir called Show Me the Magic.
And I feel that in a way it's sort of like realistic magic, not to be confused with magic realism. But I read the book. I read his book, and I wanted to call it an American original. And in some places, actually, that also appears. So it's the magic of and a true American original, which he is.
Well, when you were growing up in Brooklyn, Paul, did you always want to be in the movie business?
Well, not really. When I was 6 or 7 years old, the first film I ever saw was King Kong. And I saw it around the corner at a little theater called the Capitol. And I went with another kid, it was about 6 or 7, named Carl. And when he saw the gorilla, he threw up on me. Now, that started me. I said, if a movie can do that to you, I want to do something in the movies. And my dream was really to be an actor. And so from an early age, you know, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, I started, you know, Errol Flynn movies and Bogart and John Garfield and that sort of thing. And I would lie in the bathtub doing imitations of him. Clark Gable, now look here, Scarlett. That sort of thing. And it wasn't until really when I grew up and I was like 21 or 2 or 3 years old, I don't know, a little, maybe 25, I saw Vitelloni, the Fellini film, at the 8th Street Playhouse one afternoon. And I was shaken. I had goosebumps. I knew all those Italians. I knew who they were. I felt. And I said, maybe someday I could start directing.
Because that's a film about guys who hang out together in a neighborhood. And it could just as easily have been Brownsville.
It could have. And it touched me deeply. And later I had the wonderful good fortune to write a part for Fellini in one of my movies, Alex in Wonderland. Mm. And I got him to do it.
Alex in Wonderland, which has been called by some, your 8 and a half.
Yeah, no, I stole it from Federico. There's no doubt about it.
You had to really court him, I think, to get him to do it.
It's a long story, but I had to go to Rome and convince him. And he said to me, you really want me? You don't need me. Use a dwarf for a giant. Use a puppet. You don't want Fellini. But he finally did it, and I got him to do it. And we remained friends for all those years, 1971, till he died.
Very close. When that kid threw up on you, you were Irwin Mazursky.
I was Irwin Mazursky.
So why change the Paul, the Irwin, but not the Mazursky? You could have been Paul Majors or Paul Mazur.
Well, that's
or something
another
like that.
Good story, which I'll tell you quickly. I was now not engaged, but I had a girlfriend named Betsy, who I later married. And I was working in the Catskills. And I had already appeared in Stanley Kubrick's first picture called Fear and Desire. My name was Irwin Mazursky. But I didn't like the name Irwin. I never liked it because I seemed like a nerd, a silly name. Irwin!
And there's no real nickname for Irwin either.
Well, Irving, you could say, which is worse. So I'm in the Catskills. I'm a waiter. I get a phone call. They tell me to go to the phone booth. And it's Betsy, my girlfriend, calling me. And she says, Stanley Kubrick just came over, and he's dubbed the movie in. He's ready to put the titles in. Do you want to use that name? I said, no, I don't like that name. So what do you want to use? I said, well, what about, and I started thinking, Bart Howard, Jack Timpson, you know, cowboy names. She said, no. I said, well, let's keep Mazursky. She says, what about Philip? I said, I don't like Philip. Lawrence, that's your middle name. I don't like Lawrence Mazursky. She says, what about Paul? The operator said, your 3 minutes are up. I said, make it Paul, Mazursky.
And that's how you
and that's
began.
How I got that. I swear. That's
now,
in my book.
If anybody calls you Irwin, do you
mother,
turn around?
My mother still calls. No longer. She's gone. But my mother at the opening night of the Lincoln Film Center's when Bob and Carol opened the festival in 1970 or something like that, my mother came and she said in front of Mayor Lindsay, Natalie Wood, Culp, Elliot Gould, everybody, Frank Finch, me, Irwin killed me.
Well, so it was Irwin, Bob, and Carol, Ted, and Alice.
Right, right.
But that also had to have been a thrill to have the opening night at the film festival.
It was great.
Well, so there you are. You started your career, your acting career, when Stanley Kubrick started his directing career, and that film still is rarely seen. But do you see in it now the clues to where he was going to go?
It's a very good question, and I'll give you an honest answer. It's not a very good movie. Stanley didn't like it. In fact, he requested many times that people don't show it. Because once John Borman had showed it, I think, in Telluride, and Kubrick didn't like the idea. And Borman said, come on, it's part of your early work. You can see his eye. His eye is clearly there. He was a photographer for Look magazine.
Well, what about you? You're an actor.
You told
the story of your acting career
yeah.
in Next Stop Greenwich Village.
Yeah.
That's probably your most autobiographical film.
I would say it is. That's the film that's playing tonight, Friday, Lincoln Center, Walter Reed Theater.
6:15.
In any case,
director will be there.
I will be there for Q&A and all that. I start the evening with a 15-minute clip of my acting. It's worth seeing because I include in it Fear and Desire, the Kubrick thing, and you'll see that it's odd and bizarre, and I thought that my performance was kind of... I thought I'd win the Oscar. I made a speech and all that. I got zero. But it's curious and it's worth seeing. I also appeared in a movie called Death Watch, a Jean Genet play that Vic Morrow directed. No one has seen that movie.
Another actor-director.
Vic directed it. And then there are clips of many things I've done on my own, and Sopranos and Curb Your Enthusiasm. But in any case, I don't know. You can see Stanley's eye in Fear and Desire.
But I find it interesting that you started as an actor, then you started writing, then you directed, and now you're an actor again. But we can get into that. How did you go from the acting to the writing? Had you always written?
I had a comedy act called Igor and H in the 50s, 1954, 5, 6, right around then. I had acted in Blackboard Jungle after the Kubrick movie. And when I came back, the only parts I could get were punks. Tough, you know, Brownsville kind of young punk guy. I just couldn't stand it. So I started doing a comedy act, and we played the Bonsoir and the Village Vanguard, the Rue Ben Bleu, upstairs at the downstairs, 1/5th Avenue, etc. And we were good. We were very sophisticated. We did takeoffs on Omnibus, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a New York kind of
It was for smart people.
Very smart. Pops Whitaker from the New Yorker gave us good reviews. I remember it well. And I later did a single because I broke up with the guy, the H. H was Herb Hardy, who was writing a novel. Said, I don't want to take my pants down in public anymore. That was being a comedian. And I played Chicago at the Gate of Horn. I played the Hungry Eye in San Francisco. I began not to like it. It was difficult, strange, and odd. But that's how I started writing. Then
but
I got
it was a one-man show? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, no, I did it as a single. I played the Statler Hilton in Dallas and got no laughs in 40 minutes. To get no laughs in 40 minutes, let me tell you, it's a life-changing experience.
Thank God you never made a movie that did that.
No, I never made a movie that did that. But then I was doing a review in Los Angeles. I had replaced the Second City Group. I was doing the Alan Arkin stuff. Somebody saw it. His name was Perry Lafferty. He had directed me in New York, and he was now producing the Danny Kaye variety show. He said, you're funny. Would you like to write for Danny's show? I said, yeah. So Larry Tucker and I got a 4-week trial, and we lasted 4 years. And in that 4 years, at the end, we were sort of the head writers. And by then, we'd written two scripts. One was called H-Bomb Beach Party, which almost got made. Mm-hmm. And then I Love You, Alice B. Toklas, which Peter Sellers read. It got made, and I was supposed to direct it.
Actually, I have to interrupt here because the only thing that apparently I got wrong in the description of Alice B. Toklas was that Peter Sellers didn't want a novice as a director. Apparently he wanted Fellini.
What happened was Sellers, who was quite eccentric, to be mild, quite eccentric, a great, great actor, but very eccentric. He said, well, who do you think should direct this, Paul? And my agent told me, don't tell him you. It's too early because he'll find a reason to fire you. He always does. I said, well, I don't know. He said, what about Freddie Fellini?
Freddie Fellini.
So I said, but Fellini, he only does Italian. I want Freddie Fellini. So we sent the script, pretended to Fellini. He never got it. And the agent, Freddie Fields, was a great agent, called back 2 days later and said, Fellini's busy. He wished he could do it, but he's busy. He can't do this movie about hippies in Los Angeles. So now we go back to Sellers. He says, well, all right, I have a better idea. Let's get Ingmar Bergman, which caused me to put a handkerchief in my mouth. Okay? It's a true story. Well, Bergman, of course, we never sent it to him. The only funny thing about Ingmar Bergman was told to me by Sven Nykvist, who did one of my pictures.
He was a great cinematographer. Great.
I said, does Bergman have any humor? And Sven said, yeah, Paul. Sometimes Ingmar has a funny nightmare. Okay? So now I say to him, what about George Roy Hill, Mike Nichols? I mentioned, I don't know, no, it's out of the question. And suddenly he turns to me and says, I know who should direct this film, Paul, it's you. It's been staring me in the face. My heart is pounding. I say yes. He says yes. I'm now the director. 2 or 3 weeks later, he accused me of having an affair with Britt Eklund. Okay?
Really?
Unfortunately, I
named him as correspondent.
I had no affair with Britt Eklund, but he named me as correspondent. I was out as director. He changed his mind a few weeks later, and then we became very close. I'm very sorry, Paul. I apologize. Picture it started, and he wanted me to take over, and I didn't do it. In any case, that's how Sellers. That's
so. Now we set the record straight.
Now, Joanna, Paul has been mentioned alongside another actor, writer, director many times. In fact, somebody worked with Woody Allen. Do you see that? Because I have a hard time seeing
I do and I don't.
That.
I think Paul, as I said, I see him in his own light. But there is an affinity, I think, with Woody Allen, although I think Woody Allen is more astringent. And there's also, there's Mel Brooks, who doesn't have the visual. It's more gag oriented. His work most of the time that he directs is very funny.
I like Mel Brooks. There's nothing but me and Mel.
I think some of
you
the
should
jokes,
be a curator.
But both of those guys wrote themselves into their own films, and you never did that, Paul,
no,
even though you're an actor.
No. So he's much more the filmmaker auteur than,
well, let
than
me,
the others.
Let me say one thing. I directed Woody in Scenes from a Mall, and Woody said to me, why don't you star in your own movies? You're the funniest man I've ever met. I said, but I'm not a movie star, Woody. You're a star. He said, yeah, you should do it yourself. So the next picture I did was called The Pickle, and I tried to get the part, and I couldn't get it. So what can I?
But you are in some.
I have a very good.
You're
part.
You're just not the star of your film.
I have a good part.
Well, Hitchcock did that too.
Yes,
Enemies of Love Story. I have a very good part. You know the difference for me.
And Alex in Wonderland, you have a very
Alex
good part.
Alex Wonderland is my best part, probably. Yeah.
It's a fabulous part.
I came in second.
Unfortunately, we couldn't get that print, so we're not showing it.
Yeah, but I wish we could.
Well, let's take
a
little break.
We're showing a clip from it.
But we'll take a little break, and we will come back with more. More from Paul Mazursky, whose films include at least the ones that are being shown at Lincoln Center, and I'm doing this alphabetically, Bloom and Love, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, Enemies, A Love Story, Harry and Tonto, I Love You, Alice B. Toklas, which he wrote but didn't direct, Moon Over Parador, Moscow on the Hudson, this is an impressive list, next up, Greenwich Village, Tempest, An Unmarried Woman, and I guess the one that we have not yet seen, Yippie, A Journey to Jewish Joy. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Paul Mazursky, who is being feted with a retrospective at the Film Society of Lincoln Center under a program called The Magic of Paul Mazursky. And the curator of that is Joanna Ney, who is with us as well. You can find more information about the series by going to our show page at WNYC.org. So the first film you directed is one that made you famous, Bob and Carolyn, Ted and Alice. You wrote the script and you also directed it?
Yeah.
Did you set out to make an iconic film about swingers?
Not really. I mean, I was reading, I had written Toklas with Larry Tucker, and now we were sort of the darlings, almost the darlings of L.A. We don't know what to do next. And I read an article in Time magazine that had a photo. It was an article about this place called Esalen at Big Sur. And it was a picture of Dr. Fritz Perls, a Gestalt therapist, sitting nude in a hot tub with five or six people. And it was a new kind of therapy. I said to my wife, it sounds like a movie. So we went up to Big Sur ourselves, and we had a 48-hour marathon encounter where you're not supposed to go out of the room. And we were the only couple. All the rest of the people didn't know each other. And so during the course of this 48 hours, I began to see a movie. And it was an incredible experience. And they were very tough on me, on Paul Mazursky. They said, you don't let her talk. She's your wife. Let her talk. She wants to talk. And that's how I made, made Natalie Wood did this with Bob Culpin. So I got the idea. I came back and I wrote about, 15 or 20 pages. And I showed it to Larry Tucker. And he loved it. And we wrote the rest of the picture.
It's a zeitgeist movie, isn't it? It's something, that's one of the reasons it was so successful, because caught the spirit of the moment. But as affectionate as it is, isn't it ultimately critical of the sexual revolution?
Isn't it critical of the sexual revolution? No, I would not say critical so much as it's amused by it. I don't really take sides. I just say in that picture, these people couldn't do it. But there it was.
But they tried.
They sort of tried. Yeah, they did.
Well, we all are tempted by what we think other people are having a good time doing.
Yeah, I mean,
and then we have to decide whether that's appropriate for us.
I never did it. Mazursky and his wife never did it. Did we? Were we tempted? Really not, but we knew a lot of people who were. It was very easy to find people in those days, particularly in Los Angeles, who were toying with, going to parties where you threw your rings, your keys.
We were no slouches in New York either.
You threw your keys into on the floor on a rug, and whatever you picked up, you got. I know they were doing it here too, but I wasn't here that much then. But you see, I like the people. I like the people in the movie, the characters. And even though some of them are kind of silly and funny, in the end, I'm for them. That was a basic.
That's what I was going to say before, that one word which I use in relation to Paul's films is empathy. He's not above them. He is, he understands them.
Well, another film that you did.
You know, it's not.
I want to make one thing clear. I never set out to make a movie that would be like, okay, this is the movie that's going to say, here's the 60s, here's the 70s. I just came up with stories, and that was it.
An unmarried woman is also a snapshot of the sexual revolution. In this case, one woman responding to an unexpected divorce.
Right.
Was that inspired by anybody?
Yeah.
Or did you have to go to Esalen again?
No. I did, by the way, try to get to use Esalen as a location, but they were too uptight.
So you wound up in Manhattan?
No, I made the movie in L.A. But as far as unmarried woman is concerned, a friend of my wife's and mine named Carolyn came to our home one day in L.A., and she was divorced and unmarried, and she showed us the deed to a home she just bought, and on it said her name, and next to it said an unmarried woman. I said, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
That's a new breed. There's a breed out there called unmarried women. It doesn't say unmarried men. It doesn't say pygmies. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I started asking women who weren't married how it felt to be unmarried, women who had been married. And I interviewed, I don't know, about 10 people. And then I came up with this movie. That I wrote myself.
But to some degree, it even predates Sex and the City, but has she has a circle of friends. And
oh, no, it predates all those movies.
But I, but it, you see...
Well, there's a lot about female bonding. I mean, yeah. Because these women have each other to rely on when the men disappoint.
Well, the question is, how did... I mean, I'm asking myself my own question. How did I come to write this, having already been married probably 15 years? I wrote it in 1977. And I just interviewed a lot of women, and I've always felt closer to women than to men in a way, because women are more open. You know, when you're with the guys, we're talking about the Yankees, who I don't want to talk about right now. They're in such trouble. You're talking about baseball and sports and or Iraq and the war and all that sort of thing, but you rarely get into how you feel. And women were doing that then too, and are more open. So I came up with the idea of this group of women who loved each other and try to help each other.
The other thing I wanted to say is that it's nice to see films that are about adults who sometimes act like children, and then in many cases the children are very precocious and adult.
Yeah.
And that's true of a lot of the films.
My guests are Paul Mazursky and Joanna Ney, and we're talking about Paul Mazursky's films. They are being featured at Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater, in a series called The Magic of Paul Mazursky, which is running through...
May 10th, and actually on May 11th, if I may give a little plug to the rest of May, we have a Lee Marvin series for 2 weeks with Pamela Marvin and John Borman.
One of the greatest actors
Keith
that ever lived.
And Keith Carradine, and lots of people are coming for that. And after that, 2 days of John Schlesinger, just 4 movies by John. And finally, a very, very rare archival print of Barry Lyndon that has been shown maybe only once.
Back to Kubrick.
Back to Kubrick. We begin and end with... So Barry Lyndon is over the Memorial Day weekend, so people dare not go out of town to East Hampton.
This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Is Enemies a Love Story the only one that you adapted from someone else's work?
Yeah, that's the only one. The rest,
other than Tempest.
Tempest was just I had an idea about... Tempest causes people to cough because it's stormy and powerful.
Still, I'm coughing.
They're all
too.
Coughing. Tempest was loosely based on Shakespeare. But in a strange way, I mean, I say this, so is Harry and Tonto. I saw Harry and Tonto as King Lear about an old guy in New York.
And Art Carney must have been thrilled that you gave him that part.
Carney didn't want to do it. He was 59
really?
Years old. He said to me, "Hey, kid, I'm not old enough. I'm only 59. I said, "But Art, you're balding. You use a hearing aid. Your left leg is gimpy. You can do it. You can do it. You'll win the Oscar." And he did. He's the greatest actor I ever worked with in many ways.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Pure. Pure, pure actor. Never told him anything. And the greatest thing about Art, I'll get back to Enemies in a second, was when I asked him to meet with the cat. He says, "You know, I hate cats. I hate them. I don't like them. The only pet I have," and he opened his drawer in his apartment and took out a rock. "That's my pet. It doesn't pee. It doesn't crap. It doesn't do anything. And you don't have to feed it." But he grew to love the cat. Anyway.
Do you think that he was a great actor because he was so brilliant as a comic actor? Because some people have said that comic acting is the hardest acting, and if you can do comic acting, you can do anything, but you can't always be funny if you don't
have
that.
Well, I think there's truth in that, because Gleason was a great actor too. But I would say Carney is even deeper. Carney, as a serious actor, did very little. He just had it. He knew what to do. He never did the stuff, the great stuff he did
The Honeymooners.
The Honeymooners, where he's masterful and unbelievable. Anyway.
Enemies.
I read the book in the early 70s, or 1970, 71 or 2. I tried to get the rights. I couldn't get them. I tried to interest Dustin Hoffman in it, and nothing happened. And every year or so, I would try to get the rights. And finally, I got them. I wrote the script with Roger L. Simon, and...
Did you pass it by Isaac Bashevis Singer?
Yeah, well, here's what happened. First, I got the rights. We wrote the script. I never met with Singer up to that point. Then we cast it. I cast Ron Silver, the beautiful Lena Olin, who's gorgeous, incredible.
Made her into a star.
Well, I'd seen her in The Unbearable Lightness of Being. She was brilliant. Angelica Houston, who is now a dear friend of mine, who was also great. And a Polish actress named Margaret Sophie Stein. I found out that Singer was not feeling well. He was now in Florida, Miami Beach, sort of not well, living there instead of, because he normally lived in 100-and-something street in Manhattan, near Riverside Drive or somewhere, Broadway. And I arranged to meet him. I flew down to Miami, and his wife, Alma, meets me in the lobby. She says, "You're such a handsome man. You're so nice looking. From your pictures, I wouldn't know. So nice to meet you. So where would you like to meet Isaac?" I said, "Anywhere, wherever it's..." "Well, he's out by the pool now, taking a nap." I said, "Well, let's go out by the pool, but I don't want to wake him." She said, "If you don't wake him, how are you going to meet him?" Okay, it got funnier and funnier. I go out to the pool, and it was a David Hockney portrait. A swimming pool with the Atlantic Ocean behind it, all this bluish aquamarine colors, and this old man in like a seersucker suit and a little hat, dozing. Next to him, a Latina nurse in a white outfit. And Alma goes over and she shakes his hand and says, "Isaac, wake up, it's Paul Mazursky, the boy who's going to make a movie, From Enemies." He opens his eyes, he looks at me, piercing blue eyes, grabs my hand real tight, very tight, and says, "I didn't like what Barbara Streisand did with Yentl." Well,
like it was your fault.
No. So I said, "Mr. Singer, I promise you there'll be no songs in this picture." He says, "You'll make a nice movie." Then I showed him the pictures of the actors, and he said, "Nice, nice, Herman, good, this one, good, that one, that's nice." Then I showed him Lena Olin's picture. He took about a minute looking it over. He said, "You'll make a good movie."
Anyway, you ever get any feedback after it was made?
Yeah. I arranged for him to see the film. He was obviously still alive. And he wrote back saying, "This is the first film ever made from one of my things that I really liked. You can have any of my books. I have some even under the bed in New York that never been, you wouldn't know about. P.S., is there any more money?"
But you never made another film from him.
I want to make one. It's called Shosha. Hard to get the money.
Meanwhile, you've been directing in theater. You did a play in Los Angeles, and you've been acting a lot. No more films for a while?
Well, no. I directed a play called Catskill Sonata, and it's still running. This is its 9th week. We may bring it to New York. It's possible. It's a play by Michael Elias. It's very interesting. It's about the Catskills in the late 50s during the McCarthy era.
Now, you just have to clear one thing up for me. Is it true you wrote the pilot for the Monkees?
Yeah. I wrote it with Larry
Tucker. Classic television show.
Yeah. "Hey, hey, we're the Monkees." I think we ruined the American mind by writing that pilot and starting this business of flipping and turning. It's MTV. It comes from that. So I'm responsible for that. Yeah, I did. But I've acted a lot in the last few years. It's been difficult for me to get the money to make the movies I want to make. I have one now called An Honest Man about a Mexican dishwasher in L.A. who found $250,000 that fell off a Brinks truck and eventually gave the money back.
Well, let's hope that this retrospective will inspire some people to give you more money. The Magic of Paul Mazursky at the Film Society of Lincoln Center Walter Reed Theater. And it runs through the 10th of this month. My great thanks to Paul Mazursky and to Joanna Ney, who is the curator of it, and many other series at the Walter Reed, and also the New York Film Festival. Thank you both so much for being with us.
A great pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
My pleasure.